Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and the Bridgegate trial, believe it or not, is entering week five, and the bombshells and revelations just keep coming. As a reminder, it's Bridget Ann Kelly, Governor Christie's former deputy chief of staff, and Bill Baroni, who at the time was the governor's top appointee at the Port Authority, who are on trial in the lane closure scandal. Both defendants are expected to take the stand in their own defense. And Bill Baroni, up first, is actually testifying right now. So with me now to review and preview the Bridgegate revelations, we fit into a few minutes here, are Nancy Solomon, who directs WNYC's election coverage and is the managing editor for New Jersey Public Radio, and Andrea Bernstein, senior editor for politics and policy for WNYC, who's sharing courtroom duties with Matt Katz, who is there today. Hi, Nancy. Hi, Andrea.
Hey, hello. Brian.
And, Andrea, I know you were in the courtroom some last week. Matt's there covering it right now, listening to Bill Baroni. But there were some pretty big headlines last week, weren't there?
There were. I mean, they just, as you say, they just keep coming. The defense is building a case that they've now introduced twice the idea that Bridget Kelly, one of the defendants, discussed this with Chris Christie. This came up during testimony of another Christie appointee and of his former chief of staff. So that is sort of what they are telegraphing, that in addition to David Wildstein saying Christie knew, Bridget Kelly is going to also say that Christie knew. So that is the case that they are building. And on the stand last week was Charlie McKenna, not exactly a household name, but a former federal prosecutor for 18 years with Chris Christie before he went to the governor's office. And he was cross-examined, withering cross-examination, about why didn't he investigate, why didn't he ask questions. And he kept saying, well, I just thought it was a traffic study. And on cross-examination, he was asked, well, you were a federal criminal prosecutor. Didn't you have an investigative instinct? And he said, well, I'm not the chief investigator. But the case that the defense is building is that the reason that Christie didn't investigate it was because they all knew that it would lead back to Christie. So if you think about that and you let that sink in, if that's true, if they are able to present evidence and build that narrative, that suggests that there were an awful lot of people who were working hard to keep this quiet until now.
Which, Nancy, wouldn't let Bridget Ann Kelly and Bill Baroni off the hook, would it? If their defense is, oh, we were just pawns in a game and this went higher than us and maybe it even went all the way up to Governor Christie, they still did it, didn't they?
I think that's what we'll hear in the closing statement from the prosecution, is that they still bear legal culpability for this scheme. But I think what the defense is trying to do is what is called jury nullification. Thank you.
Right.
Which is that they plant this idea in the minds of the jury, or explain and show evidence that it really was higher ups, and then the jury will decide in their favor, even though, you know, legally that's not the case the prosecution is making.
And I just want to say, Brian, having listened to an awful lot of the evidence, and so even if you give the prosecution everything that they say about these two defendants, I have a palpable sense after listening to 4 weeks of evidence that whatever these two did, there were certainly other people higher than them that knew about it and maybe even directed it. So it's a sort of a, you know, it's a kind of a sinking feeling that these two individuals may be called to account criminally, but other people are not on trial and are not being called to account in this federal case.
Where they are right now is that the prosecution rested at the end of last week, and Bill Baroni, who is a defendant, I guess is the first witness on his own behalf for the defense. Were you surprised with anything in the prosecution case?
I was surprised by so much in the prosecution case, but particularly the testimony of David Wildstein, their star witness. You know, I think that I, along with most of the public, was sort of at the place of, you know, Christie had created a culture. But what David Wildstein testified is that Christie didn't create a culture. Christie personally told him to do things. and that Christie knew about the lane closures, Wildstein says, and Christie did not stop them. So to me, that was surprising, and it was surprising even though we had done a lot of reporting about how David Wildstein was much closer to Christie in his inner circle than was previously known. Even I was surprised by some of the meetings that David Wildstein described. For example, meetings at the State House with Governor Christie, where Christie was saying, fire this person or hire this person, hire the Passaic County Sheriff because I want to get him out of the way so I can control that seat. That testimony to me was surprising, that if true, that Christie was personally involved.
Indicate that Christie could have been involved at that level of detail because
right.
he was doing other things at that level of detail.
One of the other things I found quite surprising was just who was missing from the list of witnesses. I mean, we didn't hear from Bill Stepien, who was running the campaign for reelection. We didn't hear from Governor Christie. We didn't hear from David Sampson, the chair of the Port Authority, who, you know, it was emailed on the day the lanes were reopened by Patrick Foy at the Port Authority. Barone and Wildstein were texting that Sampson is retaliating. We didn't hear from Kevin O'Dowd, the governor's chief of staff, who was Bridget Kelly's boss. We didn't hear from Regina Egea, the incoming chief of staff, who was texting with Governor Christie during the testimony in the legislature.
Do all those omissions add up to one big thing?
I think it adds up to the level of participation in Trenton from top members of the Christie administration in this scheme. And, I mean, you know, the problem is we're dealing with a criminal trial and not an investigation into the truth,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So the prosecution they're trying to make a case against their two defendants. We want to know who was involved, when they knew it, and what they did.
But if all these people up the chain were really involved, wouldn't it have been in the prosecution's interest to call more of the people you just listed and make them say under oath that they were involved?
Well, I'm not sure.
Well, no, not necessarily, because all they have to do is prove their case against these individuals. And they have their star witness, David Wildstein, mm-hmm. who is an acknowledged liar, but who did testify under oath as to all these things and is himself facing perjury charges and a long jail sentence if he lies under oath. They have all of these emails, some of which, you know, we've known about and other ones which we just learned about at trial, showing knowledge of the closure. So that's all they need against these individuals. They don't need Chris Christie or the campaign manager who was not charged because he, you know, at the time he wasn't in charge of government resources. He was working on Christie's campaign. So that is their view of it. I mean, I think it's worth stepping back and saying that, you know, I know we've talked about this before, but Christie was the U.S. attorney. He had made public corruption his thing. So the senior public corruption prosecutors in New Jersey were conflicted out and couldn't be involved in prosecuting this case. Then there's the fact that he controls the attorney general and all the local prosecutors. All of this has come out, has been underlined at the trial, and it's kind of stunning when you think about who can be called to account for this.
And that, I think, brings us to what might have been the biggest bombshell last week, which didn't even happen in this courtroom. A New Jersey judge allowed a complaint against Governor Christie to go forward and handed it over to prosecutors who will have to figure out what to do with it. They could decide there's enough evidence now based on what's come out at the main Bridgegate trial to charge the governor with something or not. So, Nancy, can you explain this? Because this is still confusing to a lot of people hearing what a judge in a different court is allowing a complaint against Christie related to Bridgegate to go forward, even though he wasn't charged in the main Bridgegate case?
It is confusing. And so what we have is a activist from Bergen County who, you know, some people would consider a gadfly, somebody who's sort of constantly haranguing government officials over things. Files a complaint based on David Wildstein's testimony that Wildstein told Governor Christie about the lane closings on 9/11 at the memorial service at Ground Zero, and so the idea is if Christie knew about the lane closings midway through that week and didn't do anything to stop this, that he's saying that that is official misconduct, and that that is a criminal offense. And so this citizen came forward and filed a citizen's complaint, which is allowable in New Jersey. A Bergen County lower court, a municipal court judge, had held a hearing, and Christie's lawyers were there and argued that there's no basis for this complaint and it should be dismissed. And the judge said, no, I'm not going to dismiss this. But now the confusing part is now it goes to the Bergen County prosecutor, who is a Christie appointee.
Oh, boy.
So
does that person have to recuse themselves?
That is out there being suggested. And it was, we were not present at the hearing. And so it's unclear to what extent the judge said this would be a good idea, or that he recuse himself, or I would expect him to recuse himself, or he must recuse himself. But we don't know the language the judge used, but the suggestion is that the Bergen County prosecutor recuse himself. But this really gets to a lot of the reporting that we've done. The governor of New Jersey is the most powerful governor in the country, and these are the ways that it happens. This is where the power comes from. He appoints the attorney general. He appoints the prosecutors. When a prosecutor, this guy was appointed by Corzine, the previous Democrat, but then he was reappointed by Governor Christie. Mm. So Governor Christie has a lot of influence in the legal system in New Jersey across the whole spectrum of prosecutions.
So the Bridgegate prosecutions that are taking place in federal court were brought by the U.S. attorney, federally appointed Paul Fishman. He's an Obama appointee. So he would presumably have no conflict of interest and would have had reason to investigate fully if Christie himself were involved and bring charges against him as one of the defendants in the case that's now taking place, if they had found it. So what this other court has to do is listen to this Bridgegate trial testimony, like Bill Baroni testifying today, and determine if anything new comes out at that trial that then will say, aha, Paul Fishman may have investigated, but he failed to uncover the truth that now has come out, and so they can go against Christie in this other court?
It's actually beyond that point. So the judge reviewed David Wildstein's testimony about what happened on September 11th. And just this morning, Bill Baroni testified also that they discussed the lane closures on September 11th.
With Christie.
Although Baroni says
so it wasn't. So that's new this morning.
That's new this morning. Although Baroni says it wasn't, he didn't hear any discussions about retaliatory in nature. So that is a discrepancy between Baroni and Wildstein. But now there's two of them saying we discussed lane closures in Fort Lee on 9/11. But the judge in this criminal case, in this other local case, says there's probable cause to charge Chris Christie for official misconduct, which is a state crime. And it has to do with knowing about the misuse of public resources and not stopping it. So that is a separate thing, although it is an interesting thing because I've talked to various current and former federal prosecutors as this trial has gone on, and I've often said to them, well, what about Chris Christie? Can he be charged? And they've said, well, where we think the most likely place where he would be charged is state court, but then see the above about who controls the state courts.
And here they go. So we will leave it there for today. My guests have been Nancy Solomon, who directs WNYC's election coverage and is the managing editor for New Jersey Public Radio, and Andrea Bernstein, senior editor for politics and policy for WNYC News. She and Matt Katz are switching off, going to court. Today is one of Matt's days to actually follow the trial, and they'll keep coming on and updating us here as well. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now, if you've been listening through the morning, we've been telling you about our new membership drive thank you gift, the Brian Lehrer Show activity book. Well, coming up in about 10 minutes, the creator of the activity book, John Chinesky, will join us for a This Day in History quiz. You may already know John as the Ask Me Another puzzle guru, and the puzzle guy with a way with words, and he's going to stop by for just a second right now. He is stopping by. He's here to tease that upcoming segment with one question for you to think about over the next 10 minutes. So, John, so glad to have you come and play with the Brian Lehrer Show this week.
Hi, Brian. It's great to be here.
And for designing this activity book, which is like more fun, so much fun, I think my head is going to explode.
It was a lot of fun to make. You know, I learned more about Bridgegate, creating a puzzle on Bridgegate. It's just a little teaser for you that there is a Bridgegate puzzle in the book.
We're going to take calls in about 10 minutes with some questions you have on this day, October 17th. In history, and you're going to tease it right now with just one?
I'm going to tease you with a question about yesterday in history, because usually Trivia NYC, that's our company, Trivia NYC, we do every first round of our pub trivia is on this day in history, but I thought yesterday was important enough to mention this.
Okay.
Yesterday in history, exactly 100 years ago yesterday, on October 16, 1916, what activist, writer, and nurse opened the nation's first ever birth control clinic in Brooklyn?
Activist, writer, and nurse. And
right.
that's a clue. I know the answer to this, so I'm not going to give it on the air. We will let that sit out there. Ask it one more time so people get it, because there are a few details in there that are little clues, and then we'll come back, and that'll be the first answer in 10 minutes when we play This Day in History.
Of course. Exactly 100 years ago yesterday, on October 16, 1916, what activist, writer, and nurse opened the nation's first ever birth control clinic in Brooklyn?
Does she have a descendant who currently works for the New York Times?
Perhaps. I'm not prepared to give away that much of a clue. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. We will leave it there. John, talk to you in 10 minutes.
Very good.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.